Burlington, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next. And we welcome you to the Tuesday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. We had the day off here at WGTD, but it was not a day off at the University of Wisconsin Parkside, I dare say, with all kinds of energy all about the campus as they gear up for yet another academic year with the school beginning tomorrow, the first day of classes tomorrow. And I am so glad that in this very busy time that I can welcome back into our studios Dr. Lynn Akey, the Chancellor of the University of Wisconsin-Parkside. And as a matter of fact, Chancellor Akey, who has only been on the job for about 8 months or so, is about to be officially inaugurated as Chancellor of Parkside. And we'll be talking about that big event, which is coming up a little bit later this month. We'll talk about all of the activities related to the start of a new school year. We will also talk in general about the challenges facing the whole world of higher education, including Parkside and Gateway and Carthage, and especially what made this a very, very challenging year in the whole business of recruitment and financial aid. It was a year like none other, and hopefully a year that will never be repeated. We'll get into all of that as well and talk about some aspects of Chancellor Akey's hopes and dreams for Parkside going forward. Chancellor Akey, Dr. Lynn Akey, we welcome you back to the morning show.
Oh, good morning, Greg. It's such a pleasure to be here. I appreciate the invitation to come and spend some time and to talk about higher education and also Parkside. So thank you for having me.
Happy to have you. I should mention to our listeners that you and I crossed paths this summer towards the end of August when the Harbor Park Jazz Rhythm and Blues Festival had to move indoors, sadly, yes, because of the threat of thunderstorms. And so UW Parkside kindly opened its doors and welcomed a whole lot of people in for that big event, which you, of course, attended. And it was fun to see you there.
Yeah, it was a wonderful event. Happy that we were able to accommodate that at our field house. And it was a bit of a muggy, warm August day. And thank goodness we did move that event indoors. If those might recall, that weekend we did have some fairly strong downpour. So all in all, it was a good thing. Happy to host that and see our community enjoying some great jazz and also supporting our community efforts.
Very good. So you are joining us at an incredibly busy time, of course, with a lot of new students already coming to the Parkside campus, and we'll talk in just a second about some of those really fun activities that have already occurred and some that I think are happening tonight and tomorrow as classes begin. First, I think it might be interesting and helpful for some of our listeners for you to just sketch what UW-Parkside is and sort of its place in the overall University of Wisconsin system.
Sure. Well, you know, interesting that the University of Wisconsin system is a large, comprehensive system, right? 13 universities. Within that, certainly we have the Research One Institution in Madison that folks often think of when they think of the Universities of Wisconsin. And then certainly we have close by to us the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, which also serves as a strong research-based institution, also focused with access as a part of its mission. Outside of those two institutions, then the rest of the universities really serve as regional comprehensive institutions. And so within that, though, there are a couple of us that are fairly distinctive or unique. You might often think of UW-Stout, which has a polytechnic mission to it, and then us at Parkside, in which we have a mission of serving students that are more fully integrated within our community. Sometimes folks might think of us as a commuter campus because we have such a strong population of students that live right around us within the region versus maybe a more traditional residential type institution. It's sort of interesting to note that Stout and Parkside are actually the only two universities of Wisconsin that aren't actually named after the communities in which they reside. So also something that makes both of our institutions a little bit distinctive within the large system.
Right. So you're not UW-Kenosha. And it's funny, all these years I've been talking about the University of Wisconsin-Parkside, that never really dawned on me that that's not a geographic distinction whatsoever. And when you said you were one of 13, I'm pretty sure that's one of 13 four-year institutions.
Correct. Four-year institutions, that's correct.
Right.
Yes. Yeah, you know, certainly the system has gone through all kinds of transition and transformation over the last many years. Certainly what's been, you know, in the media more recently is focus on the two-year campuses, right? The colleges that have served our communities, those were merged back many years ago with the four-year comprehensive universities. And so there's been lots of movement and transition around our two-year institutions connected to four-year institutions. Parkside does not have that dynamic here, and we don't have a community college that's connected to us or a satellite campus, but other institutions absolutely do, and we've read quite a bit about that in the headlines recently.
Right. You were, before you came to Parkside, I'm pretty sure you were in Mankato, right?
Correct, yes.
So Minnesota. Where you were, if I got this correct, founding vice president for the Division of Student Success Analytics and Integrated Planning.
Yes.
At Minnesota State University in Mankato. So, first of all, you had to have quite a large office door if that large title was adorning your office door. But I'm just curious, was Minnesota State University part of anything comparable to the Wisconsin state system?
Yes, actually, the Minnesota state system, in higher education in Minnesota, let me explain, there are two actual higher education systems. They're the University of Minnesota system, so the main campus in St. Paul, Minneapolis, the Twin Cities, along with campuses in Duluth and Crookston and Rochester. And then there's the Minnesota State System, which actually has 26 institutions.
Wow.
And it is a merged system of both comprehensive four-year institutions as well as two-year colleges as well as the technical college system.
Wow.
So it is a much more kind of robust of technical colleges through 4 years. So it's structured a little bit differently than what we have here in the state of Wisconsin.
But you are, but on the other hand, you are used to being part of a system.
Yes.
And I suppose that's really important because somebody who comes from another situation where it is essentially a standalone college or university does not have to kind of worry about those sorts of relationships, nor do you have the benefits of those relationships. So so this is nothing new to you then.
No, it's very much familiar, and I think lends itself well to even, you know, the relationships that we have here locally around Parkside. Right, because I'm used to working very much with other higher education institutions, whether it's partnering and collaborating with other four-year institutions, or because we, you know, coming from a system in which technical colleges and community colleges were a part of the same system, very much much used to developing those collaborative relationships with technical colleges. And so while all of us here in the Kenosha region aren't a part of the same system, it's very natural for me to think about what types of partnerships we can have, what types of collaborations we can build. And the bottom line is that's good for students and that's good for our community.
Absolutely. For those of you just joining us, we're speaking today on The Morning Show with Dr. Lynn Akey, the Chancellor of the University of Wisconsin-Parkside, our neighbors to the north, and they are about to begin yet another academic year at Parkside, and classes actually begin tomorrow. I was noticing that, and you mentioned before we went on the air, that there have already been activities, of course, in terms of welcoming new students to campus, and I want to be sure to talk about a couple of things that are already that are still to come. But first of all, maybe just talk a little bit about just the number of new students we're talking about who are coming to campus to begin their Parkside experience and what has been happening with them thus far.
Yeah, well, it is an exciting time of year. As you mentioned, this is my first fall at Parkside since I got to join the institution midway in January. So it's exciting to see firsthand all of these new student activities and events. But we are really welcoming back our undergraduate and graduate students. As you know, it's an institution we serve a little over 4,000 students here within the region. And so about 3,000 of those students are undergraduate degree-seeking students, and then we have, a little over 700 graduate degree-seeking students, and then we serve a robust number of non-degree-seeking, so professionally engaged or dual-credit high school students, so a little over 4,000. This year, you know, we're looking forward. We're welcoming back a little over 800 undergraduate students new to the institution and around 150 new graduate students to the university. So, as you mentioned, lots of activities already underway. Our students started returning to our residence halls on campus, our early students a few weeks ago, but most of our students moved in here over the last 2 days. So yesterday was all kinds of fun, and last night we kicked off officially our Ranger Welcome activities with speakers and the glow party and all kinds of fun events to help students get connected to campus as well as each other. So those activities continue. Again, today we've got our new student convocation later this morning, as well as Ask Me tables and campus tours, helping everyone find their classes that will begin tomorrow. So pretty exciting time. It's always just so refreshing and fun, right, I guess, to see new students come on campus. It's just the amount of optimism and hope and excitement for everything that's yet to unfold is just tremendous. Right?
Absolutely. I always feel like during the summer, there's nothing spookier than a college campus, except, of course, you know, you'll have soccer camps and different things. But but largely, a college or university campus that seems a little dormant, it just doesn't seem right. And it's like things are right again when the students return and they're walking the hallways and the sidewalks and so on and bringing all that energy to the place. Yeah. Tell us about this glow party last night. That's an interesting name.
Well, yes, it is sort of the first large student gathering that happens for us out on the terrace. So if you're familiar with campus, you know our student union and then our residential building sort of form a very large quad with a wonderful kind of grassy mall in the middle. And so that really is the gathering space for our students. And so, so that happens for us after our opening speaker. A great opportunity. Everybody gets their glow sticks and glow everything, if you will. And they've got their glow shirts on and the festivities begin. So all kinds of activities. It's a great opportunity for students to connect with each other in campus.
Fantastic. I was reading that one of the things you do that I think is such a great idea is called Walk Your Schedule.
Yes.
Explain to our listeners what happens if somebody, a new student, avails themselves of this Walk Your Schedule opportunity.
Yeah, so we'll be doing that later today and into tomorrow, actually throughout the week. But yes, any student can stop by what we call the Bridge, which is one of our major gathering places on campus, and they have the opportunity to walk their schedule. It might be with a staff member, it might be with another student, a peer, or faculty member, or myself, and we literally take their schedule and we say, all right, let's do this, and walk with that student. So they can become familiar with our entire campus, and they know kind of where they're going for classes on their first day, because we know for many of our students, right, coming to a new place, a new campus, it can be a little overwhelming, and just the kind of daunting thought of sitting in a college classroom can be overwhelming, so figuring out the logistics doesn't need to be a part of that on the first day.
Right, and of course, for the sake of anybody who's not been at Parkside, essentially it's not, the campus does not consist of one building, but almost everything academic occurs in one huge multi-leveled building, and it's a wonderful building. I absolutely love it, but it is a little bit complicated the way it's put together, that can really be, as you said, daunting for a student to kind of make their way at a time that's already a little bit stressful and scary, probably.
Exactly. So we want to make sure we do everything to help folks find their way, feel comfortable as quickly as possible, and get to class, because we know that that's totally important.
That's job number one.
Yes.
This would probably be as good a time as any for us to touch on something that, as a matter of fact, we're going to talk about a couple of days later this week, again on the morning show, and that is the whole process of recruitment, and more specifically, the way in which that process of recruitment and enrollment was incredibly complicated, incredibly challenging in this recruitment season. And not just for Parkside, not just for Carthage, but for colleges and universities all over the United States. Our listeners, some of them at least, probably know a little bit about this FAFSA nightmare, but we probably have a few listeners where, you know, that's not necessarily a part of their current lives at all, and maybe had very little understanding of that. I think it's important for us to spell out just a little bit about how difficult this was for prospective students, for their parents, and for an institution like Parkside or Carthage or Gateway in terms of dealing with this.
Yeah, you're correct that we all across the country are still trying to manage and understand the implications of the changes that the federal government brought forward for us in student completion of the FAFSA. And certainly, you know, I understand the federal government's efforts here were to try to simplify that process, because if anyone has gone through that process themselves or tried to help a young person move through that process, knows that it's not simple. It requires a lot of documentation, a lot of things that you need to upload and input in order to move through that process, and previously had multi-parts and steps to it. And so certainly there was a strong intent to make this a simpler process, which should be a positive thing. And I think for some individuals, it might have been. Unfortunately, what we experienced was lots of delays in that system first even being available to students and their families to even begin the application process. But then once that started, all kinds of unanticipated challenges in students being able to actually complete the FAFSA process. And so we still have today a number of students that can't even begin to complete the process online, who have actually had to revert back to a paper process and then to mail documents in. But you can only imagine what that's like.
It's like going back to the Flintstones.
Yes, exactly. Yes. And then, you know, trying to gather up all of the documentation that's needed to do that. And then, unfortunately, when the system came out, even if you get your materials submitted, if everything's not perfect or there's any sort of question or challenge, for the longest time, the system was unable to take any sort of updates. And so then as a student, you were basically sitting on the sidelines waiting for all of the regular processing to move through in order to actually have your application updated so you might be processed and awarded. So what does that mean? It means we have a tremendous number of individuals across this country that really still are waiting to get true information about what their financial cost might be to pursue higher education of any of our institutions, and what type of support or resources they might have from grants or scholarships or loans that would be coming from the federal government. And that's you know, kind of heartbreaking, particularly for many of the students that we serve. And given the cost of higher education, right, we know that for our learning to be accessible it requires resources of all different types. And so for our students that are really challenged with thinking about how might I make this financially possible, to have that unanswered for so long has been difficult. Mm. And we still have a number of students today that are waiting for those answers. And so it's going to continue to play out for us this fall.
And of course, it hasn't just been hard for prospective students and their families, but you kind of made passing reference before we went on the air to folks in the financial aid office at Parkside, for instance, working morning, noon, and night to try to, in a sense, catch up and get a handle on all of this. Given that, I mean, and I'm sure in the midst of this happening, as this quiet disaster was unfolding, yeah. I'm sure the great fear was that this might have a devastating effect in terms of what this next freshman class would look like. From the sounds of it, you were able, nevertheless, even through this difficulty, to attract a robust freshman class for this fall.
Yeah, we're really pleased. Yeah, I think we've been fortunate here. While certainly I think we will see some impacts of students who would have wanted to have engaged in higher education this year, who are still sitting and waiting, not knowing, and unfortunately that it's possible. But with that, you know, here we certainly are surrounded in the Kenosha and Racine area by wonderful nonprofit agencies, Building Our Future and Higher Expectations in Racine. They had applied along in collaboration with Gateway and Carthage and Parkside to pursue funds to really support the FAFSA effort. And that's actually been an area of focus for our community prior to the kind of the crisis that loomed this fall, to try to advance individuals' knowledge about completing the FAFSA so that they have a better idea or picture about how accessible higher education can be with the resources that are available. So we were well positioned as a community, still a challenge, but positioned to be able to work together to make the best of the situation.
For those of you just joining us, we have the Chancellor of the University of Wisconsin Parkside with us today, Dr. Lynn Akey. She is joining us the day before a new academic year begins. Classes begin tomorrow. And not long after classes begin for this current school year, there is your inauguration on September 26th. Tell us a little bit about that event, what it is going to look like, and a couple of things that are going to make it, in a sense, extra special.
Yes, we do have some exciting things happening on campus this fall as we're looking forward to the semester. As you mentioned, my inauguration's been scheduled for September 26th, which is just a wonderful day to celebrate the university. I mean, that's really what inauguration is all about, and it's about thinking about the future and sort of stepping into that next chapter for the institution. For us, it's going to be a little extra special in that we're also hosting the Universities of Wisconsin Board of Regents here for its monthly meetings. Now, the Board of Regents, they do travel around the state hosting their meetings, and so they do have a schedule. The last time we hosted them here at Parkside was back in 2018, so it's been a little while since they've had the chance to be here on campus. And so we're so excited to showcase the university and the community with our regents. But they will be joining us for inauguration. And so as a part of the events, we'll have a reception with some wonderful music in advance. Then the investiture ceremony itself, in which a number of community members and regents will speak. And then the best part, the university celebration afterwards. And so we'll have that in the Upper Main. And so that'll be a great time for faculty, staff, students, and community to celebrate.
Very good. So again, that is September 26th, and of course, this event designed for students and faculty and staff to attend is also open to the public, if I understand correctly, but
right.
You really do need to RSVP, and I think if you go to uwp.edu, you can find information about that.
Yes, certainly. It is open to the public. I think that was actually promoted here just this last week, which is wonderful, and we do invite that. We do appreciate the RSVPs just so we know how to plan appropriately.
How many cookies to bake.
That's
very
right.
Good. Great. I know that in the fairly recent past, you actually had your fall convocation with faculty and staff at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside, and at that event, you laid out several strategic directions for Parkside. And, of course, you're laying out those strategies at a time that is, of course, quite challenging just for the entire sector of higher education. So tell us what you had to say to the faculty and staff of Parkside at that event.
Sure. Thank you. Yeah, I did have a chance to speak with the entire campus of faculty and staff last week at our annual convocation. And so, you know, a great opportunity to celebrate everything that the institution has moved through in the last year with just leadership transition. And as you mentioned, all kinds of challenge in higher education, and really start to think about kind of our opportunities and focus for the future. You know, we know that we critically serve a number of students really concentrated here within this Chicago-Milwaukee or Milwaukee-Chicago corridor. In fact, a little over 62% of our students come from the counties of Racine, Kenosha, and Walworth. So we are very much here. And gosh, over 90% of our students, upon completion, they live and work in the southeastern Wisconsin region and northern Illinois. So we are very strongly based here in the region and serving our community. And so with that, are thinking very strongly about what are those steps we need to take for the future? What are those directions that we need to pursue? And so I presented to the campus community after we had conversations throughout the spring three directions to help focus our efforts. The first one is really making sure that we're proudly serving the students who live, learn, and work here in Southeast Wisconsin. And really honing in on the fact that so many of our students are working while they're trying to pursue their education. In fact, at a uniquely high rate, whether they're undergraduate students or graduate students or returning adult students, many of them are trying to balance their learning with working. And we know that has some special challenges. And so we need to challenge ourselves as an institution to really do some deep thinking about what does it mean to serve the student that's working. That working student. And so we're going to pursue that this fall. The second area that I've challenged the institution, and folks have probably heard me speak about this before, is that we need to make that shift from being a provider of education to being a partner, and particularly partnering with businesses and industry in our region. We have some opportunities to think about what types of academic programs we provide in partnership. We have some opportunities to think about how do we advance high-impact experiences, again, and thinking about many of our students may be current folks that are working in our local businesses and industry, and how do we further support workforce development? Right? As I visit with business and industry leaders, they're all eager for stronger partnerships and relationships. And we know that there's lots of economic growth and development in our region, which is wonderful. We know that there's excellent job opportunities for individuals. But we want to make sure those individuals have opportunities for careers beyond that initial entry into the workforce. And so how do we partner together to be able to support that over an individual lifetime? And so we're going to lean in a little bit there. And then, you know, the third area that we're focused on is continuing to transform our structures as an institution to make sure that we're as effective as we can be, as well as efficient moving forward. And so we're going to be looking within our academic core this year to think about how do we further bring together our programs to be able to work in an interdisciplinary way, right? And we've got very strong activity already in this space, but we think we can take it a little bit further just by altering some of our structures and allowing our faculty and staff to work together more closely. And I think that'll be important, particularly as we think about the first two strategic directions being that partner with business and industry and serving students who are working.
Very good. Are these strategic initiatives that you came up with on your own? I suspect the answer is no.
Yeah. Right. The answer would be no. We did start this conversation as an institution several months ago as I was coming into the university. So certainly speaking with all of the departments and units as a part of my learning tour across campus. We also held university town halls every month throughout the spring semester, as well as we engaged in some visioning work. We had table talks, you name it, to talk about the kind of the whole whole array of topics across higher education right now and the opportunities that we have as an institution, as well as our strengths. And where do we want to go with that in the future? And so these directions really emerged from that body of work and conversation.
Excellent. By the way, I noticed that a couple of people very high up in the administration at Parkside have just come aboard. I think an acting provost and a new vice chancellor of something or other, but that also brings a certain energy to the proceedings, I should think.
Yes, thank you for mentioning that. It is a lot of activity there to really bring together the leadership team that sort of matches that future direction and vision for the institution. And so, yes, have welcomed on a new vice chancellor for finance and administration after we had a very long-serving vice chancellor move to retirement, which was wonderful. And then also welcomed a new vice chancellor for University Advancement and Community Partnership. So Devin Boris just recently joined us, which is a wonderful addition to the team. And then the third member of the leadership team is for our provost and vice chancellor for academic and student affairs. We do have an interim serving, Dr. Matt Cecil, joining us from Northern Kentucky University. Had an opportunity to work with him in my past, and we crossed paths at in Minnesota. And so very much aligns with this vision of having partnership as well as supporting our students and really focused on student success and what we need to do to kind of take it to the next level. So really excited to have him joining the team as well.
Excellent. Excellent. I know that one of the biggest parts of the job for you is around the whole issue of budgets, which of course are probably a bigger source of concern now than any time in recent history. Explain at the moment what's kind of going on with the university system and what is being asked of you as the Chancellor of the University of Wisconsin-Parkside in terms of preparing budgets going forward.
Yeah, well, certainly there's lots of activity that's happening around budgets, and there's lots that's been publicized in the media. Just as the Board of Regents at its August meeting approved its budget request, that'll be moving forward, and so certainly that's been at the top of the ticker, you know, and that the system is asking for an investment that would bring it from being the 43rd. Funded system in the United States across 50 states, up to the median. So kind of hard to contemplate that the state of Wisconsin finds itself in the 43rd position. And so there's a real kind of opportunity to think about what does that mean for our state long term if we're not able to make the kind of investments in our universities across the state. So there's a request there to really move that forward, to at least move Wisconsin up to the median. And that's really an investment in, you know, the long-term success of our state. But it's also important to our community right here around Parkside, because it impacts us as well. Like, we know that over the last 10 years, there's been tremendous impact on the financial base of our institutions, whether it's from inflation, that we've all experienced, whether it's, we've been diligent about holding down tuition and fees. And so Parkside very much taking pride in that and being the most affordable comprehensive university in the system. We know that there's been declining enrollment or participation in higher education for your universities as well. And so that puts a lot of pressure on our institutions to make sure that we're providing everything we can, being high quality, engaging with our students, providing the support that they need, and continuing to be innovative for the future. And so we're really looking at what our opportunities are to move forward there. You know, as an institution, what does that mean? That means we're very focused on making sure that we're doing our jobs to diligently monitor, our resources, that we're aligning our expenses with our revenue, and that we're continuing to move forward on initiatives that are important for us. Last year, the institution took a number of hard steps, to make sure that it was in good financial standing. I'm really pleased with the progress that the university has made. And look forward this year to kind of pushing beyond that to really now being focused on what can happen for us in the future. So really exciting there. But, you know, beyond the conversation at Parkside, this is a much larger conversation for our state. And I'm sure that that conversation will continue.
Right. I know that one of the things that is tricky is the whole matter of who makes really significant decisions that have a, you know, very, very big impact, like closing down UW Fond du Lac or something like that.
Yeah.
And where do those decisions get made, and where are the conversations occurring, and who is included in those conversations? The impression that I get is that you feel pretty good about the level of connectedness, the level of openness and transparency, that you feel like you are that you and Parkside are a part of all of this and a part of these big conversations about what is best for the system as a whole.
Certainly, you know, there are opportunities, I think, to contribute to the conversations that are happening with our Board of Regents, you know, as they look across the entire system, certainly working with the Universities of Wisconsin as they coordinate, you know, activities that happen across, you know, our entire system. For me, though, it's also leaning into making sure that Parkside is uniquely serving our region. Right. It's because we are so regionally based.
Right.
And so for me, the, you know, job number one is to make sure that Parkside is serving our students, is serving that Milwaukee-Chicago corridor, and is thinking about what we need to do to be vibrant and successful in the future. And so really pushing there is a part of the conversation. But certainly, you know, there are large conversations that are happening across communities all across the state of Wisconsin that are also important. And as you mentioned, given, you know, the financial realities of where we are, the types of investments that we're making as a state in our public state system of higher education, there's some difficult choices and decisions that are being made. None that are easy, right?
Right.
None that anyone would want. We certainly would want to continue. And so, you know, I certainly also feel for those leaders at those institutions that are navigating, right, the types of choices that are being made and informing the larger conversations that are happening with our board and beyond.
Right. Just a little point of clarification, if you don't mind. I know that one of the sadder headlines in recent weeks was the elimination of positions at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee.
Yeah.
I'm just curious, and I don't remember if this was clear in many of the media reports, and maybe I just didn't read them closely enough, but I'm not sure that I clearly understand when something like that happens, who is responsible for that kind of decision, and then specifically about, like, the specifics of who will be impacted and in what way. I guess it's a larger question about the autonomy of each individual university versus the Board of Regents, for instance, when it comes to painful decisions like that.
Yeah, well, I think it is, you know, a matter of the campus moving forward and its planning and decision-making processes. So certainly there was an ongoing conversation that was happening at UW-Milwaukee and thinking about the directions that it needed to take for the future, the best structures, its offerings to move forward, right? And so there had been a series of conversations that occurred at the institution and certainly painful,
yeah.
You know, and difficult. And so it's heartbreaking to see what's happening for all of our institutions across the state as we need to think about how we transform and change for the future. But then with that, then that decision that's happening at the local level, right, that action that's happening there is then brought forward to the system level,
yeah.
Right? So if you probably saw in the media, then the activities and actions of the institution, something as large and significant as that, does come to the Board of Regents and must be considered and taken up there. And it certainly was during its August meetings.
So in other words, it was most likely lifted up from Milwaukee itself and then approved, in other words, not legislated from on high.
Correct.
But was generated by unfortunate realities in in the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee itself.
Yeah, anything as, you know, as large impacting as this, it's not just a singular conversation that occurs, right? It's a series of conversations engaged over a period of time, all kinds of individuals that are contributing to it. And certainly these are complex situations, right? Mm-hmm. There's no easy, it's not simple. These are difficult decisions to weigh out with many, many factors and implications in mind. And so certainly, respect the work of the UW-Milwaukee campus to move through this difficult conversation, and certainly what's still difficult moving forward.
Right.
We know, any of these decisions not only impact our students and our communities, but our faculty and staff, which are the individuals that make our institutions great.
Yeah. Can you take us behind this turn of phrase called direct admission, which is also becoming more and more prominent in conversations about higher education, particularly here in Wisconsin?
Yeah, direct admission is certainly an effort that is kind of sweeping across the country. Wisconsin's not the first state to move forward in this way. But really, direct admission is an opportunity to bring down what might be potential barriers to students considering higher education opportunities, or even recognizing that pursuing higher education is an opportunity within their future. So many of our young folks just don't even contemplate that their academic work in high school or prior has put them in a position that they could pursue higher education. And so direct admission sort of breaks down that barrier of the student having to take that first step to say, I think I want to do college or go on to further higher education. And actually it positions the student to being receiving information to say, oh, this is an opportunity potentially for me. Within the state of Wisconsin and across the universities of Wisconsin, then we're doing that outreach effort proactively to the student to say, did you realize you actually are admissible to a whole number of institutions across our state? And then opens up the pathway for them to hopefully explore further. Wonderful if they choose a University of Wisconsin, but even wonderful if they just choose higher education overall. Because we know that pursuing additional education truly is the strongest pathway to long-term success, right? Financially, health-wise, happiness-wise, it leads to all kinds of positive outcomes. And so we want to make sure that every student that has that potential is pursuing it. Or at least knows that they have the opportunity to pursue it. And so that's really what direct admission is all about, is really breaking down those barriers for people of from all different, you know, types and backgrounds to really contemplate whether higher education is something that they might want to do. It doesn't, you know, it's not an automatic as far as, you know, a student saying, oh my gosh, now I'm going to higher education, right? They still need to then take the steps forward to actually pursue that. But we hope, and I hope, that it gets that conversation started in many more households that perhaps before wouldn't have even considered.
Right. And of course, at a time when this thing called the demographic cliff is occurring, in which that pool of potential students is receding, it makes all the sense in the world to think even more comprehensively about who can potentially succeed in college or university, and what might that look right. like, and what might we offer to them. That's all so important.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm really thrilled RUSD here in Racine is participating, and they'll be moving students into the direct admission process. And I look forward, KUSD, Kenosha here Unified, they're not participating at the moment, but they are. They'll be joining the effort here as we move into the next year. And so really excited that our local community will be joining this effort again to make sure as many young folks as possible know that higher education might be possible.
Fantastic. So you are about to be inaugurated on the 26th of September as UW-Parkside's 7th chancellor.
Yes.
So I'm pretty sure, although you've had a long and distinguished career in higher education, I don't think you've ever been the boss before. This is kind of a first, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
I'm just curious, what has this experience been like actually versus what you sort of imagined it would be? I mean, how has the mantle of responsibility felt in the doing versus what you anticipated it might be like?
Yeah. Well, I think first off, you know, when you come into this type of role and certainly coming to Parkside, it's just tremendous to see every single day how amazing our faculty, staff, and students are. Right? I mean, you know it, and certainly I've been a part of higher education for a long time, but you don't see it in quite the same ways as you do when you're serving as chancellor and across the entire institution, and you get to see the entire scope of how individuals' lives are impacted by higher education and by the opportunity to engage. And again, just tremendous to see our faculty, staff, and students come together and the types of connections that are formed and the lives that are transformed. It's just unbelievably rewarding. And so I feel very privileged and honored to be able to see that happen in action. Certainly, the other thing that, you know, come to also appreciate even more so than I thought I might was just the amount of community support that occurs here in the Kenosha and Racine area. Certainly, I knew that coming in, but just to see it actually in action at a whole nother level has been quite tremendous. And it's been wonderful to be able to engage with community partners and thinking about the future of this region and the next steps that we need to take forward to ensure that it continues to have the type of success we've experienced here over the last few years, the economic growth and development and the success of our communities is so important. And so being able to lean into that a little bit further than what I probably would have thought of originally has really been wonderful. Certainly, you know, there's plenty of challenges and conversations that also come with it too, but you know, what I would say is that for all of those challenges, they're also linked to tremendous opportunity and hope for the future, right? And so it's thinking about, yeah, what are those pathways forward to make sure that we're continuing to serve our students, to serve our region, to serve our community. And so even while the challenges can be daunting, I guess I think about then the opportunities and the potential are equally as optimistic about what could happen. So it makes me very hopeful for the future.
Very good. Hope is a great thing, and it can make all the difference in the world in terms of how we move forward and how we move through our challenges, for sure. Dr. Lynn Akey, 8 months on the job as Chancellor of the University of Wisconsin-Parkside. Classes begin there tomorrow, and the inauguration of Chancellor Akey takes place on September 26th. And again, we encourage people to go to the website of the University of Wisconsin-Parkside, uwp.edu, for more information about that, in case you would like to attend and be part of the festivities on September 26th. Dr. Lynn Akey, it's always great to speak with you. Thank you so much for your very capable leadership of UW-Parkside, and we look forward to your future visits to the morning show.
Oh, thank you for having me. I look forward to chatting more.
Tomorrow on the morning show, we're going to be talking about a very exciting new program under the auspices of the Kenosha Public Library, Growing KPL Kids. It's a program designed primarily for babies and toddlers, as well as their parents and guardians. And we'll be talking with Stephanie Cohen, who is a highly regarded speech pathologist, who is going to be one of the special guests. And we'll also have representatives of the Kenosha Public Library joining us. That's tomorrow on the morning show. On Thursday, Ashley Hansen, Vice President of Enrollment at Carthage, and we will talk about the topic that we touched on with Chancellor Akey, namely the FAFSA debacle and how that made this past season of recruitment for colleges and universities across the country so incredibly difficult, and the path forward. I think that's going to be an interesting conversation on Thursday. And on Friday, heavyweight boxer Jerry Cooney. The morning show airs every weekday morning between 8 and 9 o'clock. Today is going to be sunny and pleasant with a high of 76 degrees, overnight low of 56, tomorrow a high of 80, warming up a bit on Thursday. This is WGTD-HD, Kenosha Racine.